Hector O'Hawke gone, Fáilte go dtí an seo, conas atá tú?
Well, Brendan, conas atá tú hain, conas atá Corkig?
That's your go hunter, as always. You're in the Galway studio, so we're the two of us talking to each other from the regions here. You're back on our screen again on TG Cahir with Hector Balkans Go Baltics. So the cap travels again, Hector.
The cap travels again.
Is that the same hat still?
Oh, listen, this is one of the great hats. I've gone back on that website and I tried to buy another one like that. And I've bought other caps since, but it seems to come with me in the bag and I like it. And when the sun is beating down on an Irish nose and an Irish head, it always protects me. The other two lads turn a nice shade of tan up well, a nice shade of brown. But I can't take the sun, and it protects my nose. It protects the forehead. Irish men love getting a good suntan on the forehead a day in the bog, but it is protection as well as everything else.
Would you take a bit of a farmer's tan on the arm at all?
Oh, sure, I would. Yeah, I wouldn't be. I wouldn't say no to a farmer's tan. I freckle up nicely during the summer during a nice.
Do they join
tepid,
up? Yeah.
A nice tepid autumn or Linden Village summer of Galway. Yeah, it was very tepid this year in the west. So not that I factor 30 and factor 50 for me, Brendan. I got burnt once on a speedboat coming out of Koh Samui on the way to Koh Phangan on one of the shows. I took my top off for 15 minutes and I ended up in a hospital about a week later with a huge blister on the back of my the whole back of my shoulders. Never again will I inflict that on my beautiful Irish skin.
No. So listen, you at least you're getting to travel again anyway, because remember this time last year, I think it was, we were talking about Hector Éireannua, where you made a virtue of being stuck in Ireland, but you travelled around Ireland. Nice to be back out on the road again, is it?
Yeah, because Brendan, you know what? We're excited because it takes 6 months for us to plan and look at maps and do visas and do paperwork and get the go ahead and get the green light and get the government stamps and make sure we can get into this country and get the carnet and bring the equipment and find our fixers and our drivers. So there's about 6 months in planning goes into every show. So it's exciting for us and everyone that's involved in the show that we plan it, we get it ready, we head off to Dublin Airport. I'm as excited as ever when I see Roscoe coming through the double doors. Having said that, he's bringing more trolleys of gear with him than ever before. His camera skills are exceeding him. Evan arrives. We give each other a hug. And like everyone gets excited and giddy when they get to Dublin Airport or any airport to be jetting off. So as long as we have that giddiness and excitement about it. And again, we want people to come on a journey. And this journey is one of the most unique ones we've done because we're only 2 or 3 hours out of Dublin Airport. We're in behind the Iron Curtain. We're skirting along a place where every man, woman and child in Ireland now knows because of the maps on the 9 o'clock news or the 6 o'clock news. The whole world knows where the Ukraine is. We were supposed to be there last December. We couldn't go, and we have now come in along around the whole way. But it's a place where amazing countries, Bulgaria, Serbia, Romania, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, they've all seen the strong arm of communism. They've all felt that power and they've all been ruled there and they've all put up with a lot of stuff and over the years. So it's an interesting series, especially when we get out to rural Eastern Europe.
Yeah, and absolutely. And listen, Hector, as you say, those people understand what's going on over there and what's going on in the world and what Russia is in a completely different way than we do, don't they?
Absolutely. And German occupancy and German destruction and wars and bombs and aircraft sirens and air raid sirens. And I mean, the city of Belgrade, how many times has Belgrade been knocked to the ground on the beautiful banks of the Danube? What an amazing city. I mean, Bucharest, the hand of Ceausescu. I mean, in one of the most amazing cities I've ever been in my life. And you can feel what Ceausescu had and the power he wielded when he knocked a third of the city to build a Champs-Élysées type avenue twice as long, twice as big as the one in Paris, and the world's heaviest building, 7,000 room government building at the top of the main street. So in each of these countries, there's these magnificent Eastern European capital cities, and we were loving it because we didn't know it, and I didn't know my Eastern European cousins. I was lazy about, you know, the Berlins, the Amsterdams, the Spains, the France, the Italys. Even Irish people love Dubrovnik, but have we gone a little bit further? And on this series, we bring you to the outskirts of Eastern Europe.
Okay, so you started off then in Turkey, in Istanbul, and we probably don't think about it much. It's a bit far away for the city breaks and stuff. We forget what an important strategic place Istanbul has been down the years.
It's It's a transcontinental city, and I don't know if there's any other one in the world where you can straddle two continents in one city, go across a bridge, have a cup of coffee in Asia, and walk across and you're back in Europe. That statement alone shows you how important it's been for hundreds and thousands of years when trades, the Ottomans, the Romans, they all came along these ancient tracks and they found this place at the banks of the Bosphorus and they crossed and they were in Asia and they're on the Silk Road again. It's a bustling megatropolis. It's incredible. It's got Ottoman churches and Christian churches and mosques and the sound of the call to prayer. It's a melting pot of civilizations. Yeah, and you can feel that when you're there.
So layers and layers of time and history and everything.
Absolutely.
The texture of it all. Yeah.
And the Bosphorus, and it's the only way for the Russian ships to get out into the Mediterranean across this stretch of water called the Bosphorus. So it's a very strategic piece of water. And we covered that last week when we spoke to this guy who just spots what trade and who's gone up and down this river out of the Black Sea.
And listen, you also went to Gallipoli, and I didn't know this. That did 1,000 Irishmen die in Gallipoli?
Yes, at least. And they as they come off the boats fighting for the Allied forces, the Ottoman and the Turks, they were there. The Turkish boys were all bedded in on higher beach positions, and unfortunately, hundreds and hundreds, I think it's 1,100 or more, died on the bank, on the beach of Gallipoli. And there's nothing there. It's a rural beach. It's a rural headland. There's not even a village. Round the corners where the Anzacs and the New Zealand, the Australians lost their lives. Yeah. But this beach, and Brendan, I'm not a big man for museums. I enjoyed history in school. I'm not a history buff, but when I got to the beach and when I saw how secluded and serene and peaceful it was, and I saw the cemetery that the Turkish government have erected and the headstones, every single one of them for those young Irishmen, 18, 19, 20, 21 years of age, who got on a boat in Dunleary, the Munster Fusiliers and the Royal Irish and the Royal Dublin Fusiliers, and who never had a chance when they came off those boats, slaughtered in the water or slaughtered on the beach, and they met their death in Gallipoli. And we spent a day at Gallipoli, and it was moving and it was deep, and I think Roscoe felt it and we felt it because there was nobody there, and it was the exact same piece of beach and water and headland that was there in 1914. So I'm glad we did it, and I suppose we're making hour long shows now, Brendan. We can let the show breed and we can do things like this on the show, which is nice.
We get the feel of walking the stones there in that place and what it holds. And listen, on a lighter note, not really a lighter note, but you got COVID in Turkey, you clown.
No. You got your complete your facts are wrong. They're completely burned.
Yeah.
This is like a political bit. I'd like to refute that point now. But
I didn't interrupt you. Go on.
We picked up Turkey. We were fine. We did the PCRs all the way through Turkey. A Turkish PCR is the same swab, left and right and back into the throat, the same swab. So we were getting very used to the Turkish PCRs. We crossed the border from Turkey into Bulgaria. Everything was fine. We antigened about 5 days into Bulgaria. We crossed the border from Bulgaria into Serbia, and at the border and this was a real rural crossing, deep Eastern Europe, a wet, cold, late October day. And I said to Roscoe, I said, I feel like I need paracetamol, man. I think I'll get another jacket out of the boot of the car here, boot of the van. And I could feel something. The next morning, I could feel something at breakfast. I said, I feel a bit flu-y. Roscoe said the same thing, antigen positive. We hightailed it 7 hours to Belgrade. We booked into a hotel called Mama's Shelter. Quite apt. Quite apt, I think, because into the arms of Mama's Shelter in Belgrade. Roscoe was in room 314. I was in room 316. And for the next 12 days and 12 nights, Brendan, when you're in a hotel in Belgrade in the middle of Eastern Europe, in the middle of the winter, and you have got COVID and it's the Delta, I had no smell, no taste. When you wake up in the morning at about 8:30, you structure your day perfectly because I have my first movie gone at about 11 o'clock.
Oh, Mama had the Wi-Fi, did she?
Mama had a good Wi-Fi.
Fair play
to Mama's Shelter. Mama's Shelter, Lord bless her, she knew her Wi-Fi. And I watch my first movie from 11 till 1. Then I'll have a little sort of a snooze, and then I'll watch another movie, and then I'll decide on breakfast. Evan, the producer who didn't get COVID, stayed with us for 12 days. He was like our Florence Nightingale. There'd be a knock on the door. The Starbucks would be left outside. There'd be a knock on the door. McDonald's at about 6 o'clock. I couldn't taste it. I didn't know what it smelt like. We lost the smell and taste for about 3 weeks. But finally, we got out of Belgrade after about 12 days. But myself and Roscoe will never forget the loving arms of Mama's shelter.
I bet you won't. I bet you won't. Come here, going back to Turkey for a minute. There were a few other interesting little bits and pieces. You looked into the hair transplant scene in Turkey.
Yes.
It's a big
yes.
thing there.
It's a massive thing. As I said on the show, it's a mecca for hair transplants. It is the go-to place. There are hundreds of thousands of men and women who go to Turkey for a hair transplant every year. The clinic that I was in, Asmed Clinic, is like the future. It's a 10-floor building. The marble floors, the grand piano, the waterfall downstairs, the beautiful reception, the fast lifts up to the different to the hotel on the top.
Okay, so this is high-end stuff. You trust these people with your bonds, would you?
I would trust them with the robots they have. This is the future. I have seen the future of hair technology, and they have it. It's been. They're coming from all over the world, and they also come from the Middle Eastern countries. A lot of women come from the Middle Eastern countries for other tucks and nips and tucks and all the stuff that you can get done now in that mad world that you can get done. From teeth to the body to the hair. Turkey is becoming the go-to place globally, and it's a massive industry over there. And on every Turkish airline flight out of Dublin and coming back into Dublin, you will see every day many, many men of all ages in Ireland after getting the hair transplant done for a fraction of the cost that it costs here.
And fair play to them. You didn't indulge in that, but you did indulge in the hammam, the traditional bath. Can I ask, were there a few drinks on board at that point?
No. But it's just me getting up. That's what I look like at 3:30 in the morning.
Okay.
You know, you go to bed. I was watching Netflix. I think I was watching Peaky Blinders. And then Evan tells us the call time is 3:15. Like, how do you feel when you have a call time at 3:15? 4:00 in the morning, I walked into the hammam because we wanted access all areas with no cameras, with no other people. So for the treatment started at about 5:00. An amazing marble, the oldest one in Istanbul, where men have been going for hundreds of years to exfoliate, to de-stress, to drink tea, to talk, to just relax after a hard week's work.
That sounds like a great old scene.
It is. I'm opening one in Galway, Brendan. You'll be one of my first customers.
No, you'll have to let the women in as well in Ireland.
Absolutely.
We're a bit more progressive here than some
Absolutely.
Of these places.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
No, but there are hammams. The women go to the right and the men go to the left. There are plenty of hammams in Turkey. The women have always gone to the hammam as well. So I'll open one in Galway. It'll be unisex. Hector's hammam.
Very good. Listen, you've a lot of tattoos in your back, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. What have you got?
Bits and pieces.
Yeah.
I've got a picture of Sean Boylan, a picture of Colin O'Rourke, Mick Lyons. I've got a picture of Sam Maguire, 96, Graham Geraghty. No, I've Shivas and Hanumans, and Ganesh would be one of the bigger, the Ganesh, the spiritual elephant god. Yeah. The unblocker of obstacles and the bringer of happiness.
Really, yeah. And does it work? Is it nice to have him there on your back?
Yeah. For me, tattoos are a very private thing, and they're a spiritual thing. And I've been getting them for a long, long time. And a lot of my friends are heavily tattooed and like tattoos. And I do like the process and the adventure and the journey of getting one and what it means to me and why I do it.
Okay. And then it is it's certain signifiers that you carry with you through your life.
Yes,
then.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, yes, 100%, yeah.
Okay. Listen, we have a clip. This is you visiting what is described as the world's first ever shopping centre. It's the Grand Bazaar in Istanbul, 4,000 shops. That beats Dundrum. Okay, here's the clip.
Hello, my friend.
Let me see your watch.
Is this a good collector's watch?
Yeah.
You look at people, do you look at their face or do you look at their watch?
I'm looking at the watches, I'm looking at the nails, I'm looking at the teeth, I look at shoes, then you can figure it out what kind of customers you have.
Lads, you don't know where I can get a good carpet. Hakan.
Hey, Kate Miller-Folcha.
Hey, sir.
This one is Ushak Rag. And you know what? You have similar design, technique in Ireland.
You're talking to the right man about carpets, because I'm from Navan.
Did you hear of Navan carpets
yes.
at the time?
Yes.
Now, and it's weiniger shin. Tomaj in Istanbul, the country carpeti, and it's at fear. Anna egan ladshaw eg monican autul avisa nuv lenis mo nachoegan liam agus anish tasha imha.
So there you go. Of course, wherever you go in Turkey, the lads have the haushi cotton and all that. They've met plenty of Irish before.
Listen, I think the Turks have they have the gift of the gab. They would sell sand. They do sell sand to the Arabs. They do sell silicon sand, but they have the gift of the gab. That bazaar is an incredible place. I've been in a lot of markets in over the last 21 years around the world. It's a great place. They don't sell rubbish either, and it's one of those markets where you swear you'll never buy anything when you go in, and you will buy something. It's one of the go-to places in Istanbul. But your man, he loved his carpets. He'd sold carpets to vice presidents, to secretaries of states, to Brad Pitt and everyone. And he did know of Narvan Carpets because for a while, Brendan, during the late 60s, 70s and 80s, we were the mecca. Narvan was the mecca for carpets. Unfortunately, it's gone, it's closed, and hundreds of jobs were lost there. But there were many men and fathers and grandfathers and young lads who went in and served their time in Navan and Narvan Carpets.
Yeah. Rivaled only by y'all, I should say, seeing as we're in Cork. Right?
Oh yeah.
And of course we heard your man there with the bit of Irishisms. Like, but it does seem like wherever you go, I know this is very localist now, but wherever you go, they know Ireland. So you were to tell people about you're in Bulgaria. And suddenly there's these two young women trying to kind of photobomb into you.
On the streets of Plovdiv is the name, P-L-O-V-D-I-V. Again, central Bulgaria. We're walking along the street, we're getting a vibe from it. It's a student town. These two girls sort of see the camera. And I'd say they were about 19 or 20. And they sort of, they're giving it the wave, you know, almost and in behind. And I say, hello, where are you from? Oh, we're from here, we're Plovdiv, we're students. And she goes, where are you from? I said, Ireland. I said, do you know anything about Ireland? And she goes, yes, we know Mullingar. We know One Direction. We know the boys. And it was incredible. It was incredible that they knew One Direction. What's your man's name from One Direction again? In
Niall Horan.
Niall Horan, of course. And she goes, Niall Horan. And on the streets of Plovdiv, they knew Mullingar and Niall Horan.
Yeah, so it's normally you two and Roy Keane. So there you go, new generation.
The new generation.
Listen, you tried rakia. Was this in Bulgaria? Is it the local hooch in Bulgaria?
Yeah, it's the local.
How does it compare to poutine? Trick question there.
let's just say poutine has bent many a tree in Connemara over the last centuries. It's twisted many a brain on a cold winter's night, and it's also helped when you have a scoury young calf in a now lean-to shed out the back, and that might be coughing in the middle of winter. You would give the calf, or you would rub it on their stomach to warm up the stomach.
Right,
The rakia would be very similar. It is made from the local fruits, whether it's pear, berry, grape, whatever fruit is in
stock.
That
makes it sound so benign. Does it taste like methylated spirits?
Yeah, with a hint of berry. I went into this place, and rural Bulgaria, and there was a crowd of lads in military fatigues in through a sort of a dilapidated sort of a shed at the back of a farm, and it was very rural, but you could smell alcohol. There was an awful lot of plastic canisters. There was an awful lot of 5 litre and 5 gallon drums. And there was an awful lot of tubes, and then a big fire and a lot of grapes, a lot of berries. And by God, I sat in. But again, not a word of English between any of them. And I sat in, and they were all hard-working local people. This was their local hooch. It was cheap. People bring their fruit to them, and they make their own batch then for the winter or for the summer, depending on what's in stock.
Okay. And then a bit of a she bean vibe there as well. They'd all come down and get high on their own supply while they were down there, yeah.
Brendan, high on your own supply. It's the way forward, I'm telling you.
And Hector, you found your tribe then, was it in Latvia or Lithuania?
We ventured towards the northern eastern countries, the snow started in Poland, it started getting really colder, and we got into Lithuania, and I was asking myself, what relationship have I? What have I in common with these Europeans? What do I know about them? And how do I feel when I was going through all these countries? And it was only when I got to Lithuania and Latvia that I found a common connection. I was in rural Lithuania, about 5 hours north of Vilnius, where in the middle of the countryside in this rural town, thousands of people had come out to a couple of fields, a sort of a mountain area, to celebrate the end of the winter and the welcoming of the long summer nights. And they were burning these massive scarecrow effigies always like, almost like Burning Man, but everyone was dressed up like almost like the Wren boys and that old tradition of dressing up around Christmas time. There were accordions and fiddles and drums and bowrons, and they were having a few drinks in the countryside in the field, and it was a celebration of the long dark winter nights being over. And I looked around, and I could have been I could have been sitting in a pub somewhere in Ireland, and the Wren boys had just walked in. Yeah. So it was pagan like. It was very pagan like and very agricultural, very rural like. And then, as I got through Latvia, a country that's 60% forest, I went out with a survivalist on a frozen river. We managed to go a couple of kilometres down, -5, -10 degrees, and we camped in a forest. And the way he spoke, and the blue eyes and the white skin, and the way he talked about the northern forests of Europe, I just thought that line of the that line of longitude that comes skirts through Denmark, top of Scotland and down, and I felt that that's who I've most in common with. They are real, the Latvians and the Lithuanians, and indeed the Polish. But like, there's hundreds of thousands of Latvians and Lithuanians in this country, and why have they settled here, and why have they been happy here, and why did they come here? I think we have similarities that goes a lot deeper than just finding work.
Yeah, yeah. And listen, I'm glad you finally found a survivalist course, because you've been dressed for one your whole life, really, haven't you? So I'd say you've been
Brendan,
right,
it's
there.
Not the FCA. I've my favourite cap on, that's it, but I'm not going around in Doc Martens and combats like you were at the start of the 90s.
Combat jacket there, isn't there?
Oh, there is a combat jacket. Yeah, but that's a Levi combat jacket, Brendan. I might have you.
Okay, that wouldn't get you far in the Armageddon, I'd say.
Brendan,
yeah.
Combat and khaki stuff and all that never goes out of fashion. It's all circular. It's all circular.
I think the rule is, if you remember it the first time around, though, Hector, you're not supposed to wear it the next time around. So that's, I'm sticking with that. Listen, what point in the journey did war break out then, and what did you do?
Yeah, we were in Lithuania, about 20 miles from the Belarusian border, in a forest, and war broke out at the beginning of March. And to see the faces of the Lithuanian people, to be in a hotel in Riga, it was funny. We were staying in a hotel in central Riga, and this is about 2 weeks. War broke out. We were near the Belarusian border. We were about 300 kilometres from Kiev. At that stage, you're ringing home. We had plan B. Who knew? Because he was amassing troops in the Belarusian border to come in with that massive convoy into Kiev. So we had plan B, that if it got a little bit dangerous, we would fly out. And we had an escape plan. But we felt safe enough. We finished in Lithuania. We crossed the border into Latvia. On the streets of Riga, you could see there was a lot of military things happening. There was a lot in the hotel, which was quite interesting. In the foyer, there was a lot of NATO people coming in. There was an awful lot of long Mac jackets and earpieces on, and there was an awful lot of American military NATO people gathering momentum in Riga while we were there. And we were there for about 10 days, so you could feel that happening.
So the shadow was coming over everything.
Yeah, NATO, yeah. I think NATO was scrambled, and NATO forces and NATO allied bases, and where American bases, and where they had an influence on certain bases, where they had the infrastructure and all that's happening, they stepped it up immediately. So we could feel that there. But, you know, for the Latvians, they were looking over their shoulder. They were actually shocked, because Latvia and Lithuania and Estonia are only 30 something years old since they gained independence. They're only new countries. That's a new chapter for them. And was it coming to an end? So you can feel that on the streets
and
when we're there.
Hard won for them as well. Way we just don't.
You're right,
listen,
Brendan.
Lots of Hector love coming in there. Love, Hector. Delighted the shows are back. Just wish I spoke Irish, says Anne. And that's
subtitles.
Where our subtitles, Anne.
We'll bring you in, don't you worry.
Listen to this, Hector, an email. Watch that program about Istanbul presented by Hector the other night. Hands down, one of the best and most informative travel documentaries I've ever seen. Michael Palin, eat your heart out. So there you go, Hector. Listen, before you go, when you were on with us this time last year, your brother Freddie had only just recently suddenly died, and I think you were very shook at the time. And I know you had a 1 year anniversary ceremony for him since. Do you still miss him a lot?
Of course, part of my body has disappeared. It's gone, Brendan, and it's the same for my other brother, and it's the same for anyone who knew Freddie, you know. But his son came to live in Galway with me for a couple of months then after.
Did he?
Yeah. So he not only honed his English, he's the image of him. And when I see his features and I can see Freddie in him, he's 21, he's a great man. He's starting university now in Denmark. And he came to live, and he got his own place in Salt Hill, and he found a job. We got a job from him, and he was such independent. But I felt as if I don't know, he was sent to me, he came, and he, you know, 3 or 4 months after Freddie passed away, his son decided to come to Ireland, and we welcomed him with open arms, and I was over the moon that he come to Galway, and I'm so proud of him, and he knows that the door to himself and his sister Asta is always open with that Viking Danish Irish connection. But on the flip side of it, Brendan, my brother died of a heart attack, very sudden, and he needed one little stint. That was all it would have done. So many people are coming up to me and telling me stuff and writing me letters that they gone men in the gym where I meet them, wherever, and women saying they're getting their heart checked out, that they've gone and got it done, and thanks to Fred. And thanks for opening up on the podcast about it. And we shouldn't feel embarrassed or ashamed or nervous when we go into a doctor to ask him about our cholesterol and our bad cholesterol. I mean, when people write me a letter to say, Hector, I'm after getting 3 stints, I listen to the podcast in Boston, what can I say to things like that? I'm over the moon that I am. Yeah. There's something positive and happiness coming out of, because Freddie, all he needed was a little bit of treatment, and unfortunately that happens to so many people who didn't mind their heart like they'd mind their shoulder or a cruciate on the knee or whatever. It's just another thing we have to mind.
Okay, so look, but there's 2 things. One, something useful out of it, and then that lovely, the kind of poetry of the universe of your nephew coming to you like that, and fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Thanks,
the podcast is flying it, Hector.
We're delighted. Sitting in a garden shed with Tommy and Loretta for the last 2 years, and we only went to Navan the other day to speak to the school with Colin O'Rourke. We were up there on Monday. We spoke to 1,100 students, first year, second year, third year, fourth year, fifth year and sixth year, and we went back to the school, but we recorded a podcast in Navan. But we're over, listen, it's great. That's my therapy. That's where I go. We close the door with a mug of tea and we just have some good chats.
That's going great.
We're delighted.
You're earning a bit of a living, isn't it? How was Loretta's wedding to Joe Brawley, by the way? It looked like a great day.
Well, there's only one woman that can get the use of the local clubhouse at the Gap pitch and have a marquee on the Gap pitch. It was a magnificent night in Knockmore GAA, and then the day after, the afters are the best. There was a Dublin, an ex-Dublin manager, a GAA manager, and he was get on the Spotify DJ list at about 12 o'clock. And from the Stone Roses to Oasis, I've never seen a DJ as good as him. So we had a great second night.
Okay, and lots of people will have lots of different opinions.
I'm going to leave it at that. And the next time I'm on your show, I'll tell you which ex-Dublin manager took over as a DJ at Loretta's wedding. It was brilliant. It was a real Mayo celebration. And there's 2 Joes in Loretta's life, one on one side of the Atlantic and one on this side of the Atlantic.
Okay, are you going to get over to the one on the other side of the Atlantic?
Yes, we are. We're planning to go to do a couple of podcasts in New York, and I just want to do one in the White House. It'd be very funny. Get Tommy Tiernan to the White House. What could possibly go wrong?
The campaign starts here. Hector, great to talk to you. And Hector Balkan's Go Baltics continues on TG Cahir on Thursdays at 9:30. Hector O'Hockagon, Gurmila Mahagut.
Brendan Mas Mori Goni, Gurmila Mahagut Mahara.
Email brendan@rte.ie.